Welcome back to the Football Fitness Federation podcast. This is episode 219. This is the return of Paul White. Paul was on the podcast way back when, during his time at Stoke City. Now he is the head of Academy Physical Performance in the UAE at Al Jazeera Club. So we spoke about his reflections from his 13 years at Stoke. We spoke about the move to Abu Dhabi. We spoke about some of the challenges that he's facing within the new role, the staffing structure at the club and how that differs to what he had at Stoke, future plans of the programme, and also advice for coaches that are looking to move roles, not just move abroad, but moving into the next role. Jordan Tyra joined me on the podcast as well, so he's my co-host for this episode. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Now, depending when you are listening to the episode, if you're listening when it first comes out, which is on the 8th of May, you're going to be in time to register for our free webinar with Hawking Dynamics, which is based on force and football. We've got a number of different presenters on the webinar. We've got James Collins and Dr. John McMahon from Hawking. We've also got Joey Harty and Alfonso Thompson, both from Sporting Kansas City. So if you've listened in time and you're listening on the 8th, then you can register for the webinar, which starts at 2 p.m. UK time. If not, don't worry, because the webinar will be recorded and it will be uploaded to our online community, so you'll be able to check it out there. Just before we jump into the episode, I've got to say a massive thank you to our sponsors, The Good Prep. The Good Prep is a meal prep delivery service that provides fresh, ready-to-eat, chef-cooked meals straight to your door. They offer meal plans tailored to your personal goals, current activity level, and schedule. The Good Prep works closely with elite-level athletes and corporates to develop meal solutions that meet the ever-changing demands of performance and training. Their clients include Brighton Hove Albion, the PGMOL, Commonwealth Teams, Gymshark, and many more. Their meals are full of all the nutrients you need to keep you in peak performance so you can achieve every goal you set. Plus, you can reclaim your time, eat better, move more, and reduce food waste too. Their meal plans are designed to guide you through your journey to a healthier you. Take the guesswork out of healthy eating and discover the power of nutrition at thegoodprep.com. Make sure you use the code FOOTBALL15 for 15% off your first order. This podcast is brought to you by Hytro, the number one BFR brand in pro sport, helping teams and athletes improve performance and recover faster with their blood flow restriction wearables. Built for sport and proven by science, check out Hytro.com to find out more. Also, make sure to check out Rezl, the world's leading VR sports trainer. Search Rezl, R-E-Z-Z-I-L, over on social media and show them some support. And let's get into episode 290 with the head of Academy Physical Performance at Al Jazeera Club, Paul White.
Rezl is the world's number one virtual reality sports trainer. Whatever your team, your sport, your ability, improve your game and train like a pro. Rezl. Reactions, performance, accuracy, stamina, resilience. Train at home in the Rezl Sports and Fitness VR Training Arena. Search Rezl, R-E-Z-Z-I-L. Harder, stronger, smarter. The world's number one virtual reality sports trainer. Available now on MetaQuest.
Welcome back to the Football Fitness Federation podcast. This is episode 290. Anyone watching will see two top coaches on the line today. I'm joined by my co-host, Jordan Tyra. And also, welcoming back on the podcast, it's been far too long, Jokey, Paul White is back. Welcome back, Paul.
Thank you much for having me, Ben. Nice to be on the call with yourself and Jordan.
No, it's great to have you, mate. We've been lining this one up for a while, and I appreciate you doing it because I know it's pretty late over there at the minute. So I appreciate you staying up, going past your bedtime and coming on to have a little discussion and a catch up, because I know a lot of things have changed since our previous podcast that we did way back when. And I know you, yourself and Jordan have sort of crossed paths quite a bit as well. So it'd be great catch up for us all. But Chalky, just kick us off, like we always do, career, background, just take us on a little bit of a journey and also what you're currently doing.
Right, okay. So in terms of a background, obviously got my sports science degree I wasn't really too sure what to do. Mum recommended sort of teaching. I did a night course, did a bit of teaching within the academies in and around South Yorkshire. Got then a teaching job in a college in on the outskirts of Bournemouth in the New Forest. Did that for about 7 years with alongside part-time coaching AFC Bournemouth before, I think they were League Two back then. Then after 7 years, went to Portsmouth full time as sort of the academy fitness coach as it would have been then. Did that for 2.5 years before administration. Went back into teaching for about a year and a half, and back to Bournemouth, and then got the opportunity to come to Stoke at the start of the, as we have the old famous ECCC now. And sort of set up a department as part of the ECCC sort of journey. So I was there 13 seasons, I think I did in the end, in terms of a few different titles, but essentially head of sports science and S&C, if you like, for the academy. Encompass nutrition and psych as well. Yeah, did that for 13 seasons. And then this season moved over to Al Jazeera. Over in Abu Dhabi, where I'm head of Academy Physical Performance, which is similar to Stoke in terms of the, if you like, the sub departments, but also medical sort of comes under my remit as well. So a lot of similarities, but a couple of small differences. Yeah, that's my whistle stop tour.
Brilliant, mate. We'll touch on that move in a second. I know we're going to go into what you got going on in a minute, but let's just go back to the time at Stoke, 13 seasons in that role. And obviously, we caught quite a lot along that time as well. And some of the changes, some of the things that you're implementing, always looking for ways to improve the program. What were some of the reflections or the standout sort of reflections over that time, the big wins, the things that you've taken forward into this role?
Well, firstly, I must say that I've worked with some outstanding people and great practitioners at Stoke throughout my time there. And pleased to say that hopefully it's played a small part in their journey onto maybe so-called bigger clubs and higher profile roles and things like that. I think the biggest thing really is, as you're in a role for a long period of time, is sort of to empower people to be passionate about that role. There's a term in football that's used often a lot, like, and it's like, oh, stop being busy, play, say a lot, oh, you're busy. But what that means for me, like, is you've got someone that's passionate about their role. So whether that's an S&C coach, nutritionist, psychologist, physio, whatever it is, for me, you want them to be busy. You want them to come with new ideas. You want them to try and push the boundaries of that practice in that area. So that's really been like a key cornerstone that I really enjoyed at Stoke, and the staff that I had there were fantastic. And that's sort of what we're in the process of sort of building here in terms of the sub departments here, is having those practitioners and asking them to come on, how can we get better? That would be one of the, if like, the biggest learnings, is sort of empower people to sort of say, go on, try. If you make mistakes, it's fine. Let's not have like big catastrophic mistakes, but that's all part of the sort of the learning journey. And if we know it, we're testing things out, what's possibly the safest way to test out a new training method or new protocol, things like that, really. Yeah, so that really.
No, mate, that's brilliant. I think it's really important, isn't it? And we speak about academy football being that environment that you hope coaches can like execute in that manner, don't they? Where they can try things, they can fail, they can learn, and that environment's really important, isn't it? I know, Jordan, it's something that you've experienced in roles as well, and it's something that you've like pushed as well when you've had interns and other coaches that you work with too.
Yeah, and just so everyone's aware as well, what we were saying earlier, Chalky was my BAC supervisor, so I was yeah, very much on the receiving end of that, helping push the boundaries on and stuff like that. So I can definitely vouch for that one and what Chalky was doing at Stoke. And we know a few practitioners obviously have come through Stoke under Chalky's supervision, who now have gone onto other roles, and we know them quite well. So yeah, definitely back up what you're saying there, Chalky, mate. But yeah, 100%. I like the term being busy. Players always pick up on it as well, don't they? Players are always the first one. Oh yeah, he's busy, he's busy. But they tend to be the better practitioners, the ones who get ahead or do well in roles or go on and go up to different clubs or whatever it might be, because they are simply just trying to push the boundaries on that, Chalky said. So I think everything Chalky said there is 100% true. You want to facilitate that environment, even if they're a young practitioner coming in, and they just want to learn and hone their skills and improve their craft. As a line manager or as a boss, you've just got to try and almost let them run with it. Sometimes make their own mistakes. Sometimes, think, I'm not sure that's going to work, but you're passionate about it. Go on, try it. Obviously, it's not injury player, but give it a go. And they go, oh, that didn't work. Oh, why didn't it work? And then you're there to step in and facilitate that learning, if you like. So, yeah, 100% in terms of that, be that mentor as well as just somebody who's, running the department or trying to put departments together and facilitate line management, if you like.
So, Chalky, from sunny Stoke to slightly sunnier Al Jazeera club, talk us through where the move came about from, and then just initially, how long have you been there now?
8, maybe in 9 months, I think.
Okay.
9 months.
So some reflections on the first sort of 9 months as well. But first of all, how did the move come about?
It's just advertised online. And I just like the idea of, if you like, the sports science and medicine sort of being part ahead of, if you like, and to line manage those two departments. That was ultimately it. I didn't do too much research into like Abu Dhabi at the start. It was like I saw the role and I quite liked the job description, the personal spec and things like that. Did a little bit of research, like using Google and stuff like that, trying to find out some information about the area, things like that. And just thought, I've always, as I got, obviously, I realise I'm quite old now, but as I got older, that I fancied working abroad and learning a new language, and that sort of, I guess it might have, would have been like maybe in France or Spain or sort of languages you learn at school a little bit. And also the fact of just completing the Masters, the Sporting Directorship at MMU, and listening, getting more into the idea of leadership and management, reading more books, podcasts, and sort of just going, I think I'm quite a safe person. Like my practitioner and the way I work is like slow, test it, try it, and move forward in a quite methodical way. And it just, I got to the point where you hear all these, read these books or podcasts and sort of people say, you got to just go for it, you got to jump for it. And I just thought, yeah, let's try it. Spoke to the family. They were happy in terms of sort of seeing what happens. And luckily got offered the role, and here I am.
Just on that, though, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you see a lot of practitioners in roles maybe similar to what you were in previously that are doing an amazing job. They're looking to innovate all the time, improve the program, but essentially they're settled at that one club. You see other coaches that move around a lot, and obviously with the time that you spent at Stoke, it's always going to be uncomfortable changing something and moving to a different club, but not only that, a different country as well. So did it feel like a big commitment, a big step for yourself to take that move, even when you got offered it?
Yeah, like spoke obviously to the family in terms of sort of, they've offered me the role. What do you think? And it sort of sinks in a little bit more then. But then even, I would say, even though like I knew when I was still working at Stoke and obviously people knew, it probably still didn't sink in until like, I said, the last day when probably got a little bit emotional with the department I was with. Obviously the department had been there a long time. The players and the staff, like, a lot of the under-21s have been there a long time. I'd seen them since they were like 13, some of them. They got us a nice leaving present. We've got a nice driver that I brought over. but I thought I just about held it together, sort of the emotions, and just sort of said thank you. And, I'm just a small cog of what has been very, very successful academy at Stoke over the last couple of years, and just wish them all the best. And then 2 days later, I think maybe after that, I was on a plane, sort of arrived and had this idea of how I'll take this approach and that approach, and just literally ended up getting stuck in right from sort of day one, ended up watching training and things like that, and then from that, just literally in delivering, doing rehab, trying to learn names, get to know what people do. It was, yeah, maybe that's a me not being as sort of mentally prepared, but yeah, it was, don't know, it was a bit of a whirlwind in terms of coming over. And I think I did speak to people before I came out and sort of just said, you know, what do you think the best way of doing it? Because obviously I've been at Stoke for 13 years, so you're like, I've got a what do you do when you go to a new role as sort of a lead and people are looking at you and they're like, oh, just, you know, just observe and speak to people and stuff like that. So that went out the window on day two, and literally just were delivering physical sessions, rehab sessions, and then the hard work started in terms of meetings with staff and putting the processes and things in place that we wanted as a group of staff. So, which I think sometimes it wasn't planned in my head, but ultimately that's how you learn. Like all these internships that are out there, you know, people learn by sort of getting thrown in and saying, go and deliver that session, go and deliver that session. And that's ultimately what happened to me. And then you realize, well, that didn't work. We'll try something else tomorrow. But that worked a bit better. And then before you know it, you're off and running and sort of delivering a basic program of what you want to do. And then after a period of time, it's a bit of time for to reflect, have discussions with staff, and then start and try and add a little bit more detail, a little bit more structure. And that's literally what we've tried to do. I've tried to do throughout this season, where we're getting to a place where I'm quite happy where we're certainly from where we were to where we are now, on ideas for next year, really.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's interesting the first moves that coaches make within a new role, isn't it? Because you hear a lot of people talking about it in terms of reflections a lot of the time, being a bit too gung-ho, getting in there and trying to change too much in one go. But then the other option is to stand back, observe for quite a bit of time, think about methodically in terms of the next moves. But I guess for you as well, like with that big change, being a coach, being a practitioner, being able to get your hands dirty from the off has got to make it's probably going to settle you a little bit quicker than anything else, isn't it? Because you're just straight back into doing what you do.
Yeah, I certainly, like reflecting back, it was really, well, one, it was extremely hot when I came because I arrived, I think, in August. So it was like in the 40s, which was a huge shock from coming from like Stoke 4 days earlier. But yeah, sort of was had literally brief discussions with some of the staff that were there. It's a relatively new department, but some staff have been there like 6 weeks, 8 weeks before me, and sort of just trying to get their thoughts. I mean, like one of the first things I did was, I think within the first week, is just had a department meeting and basically asked them to do sort of just give me some feedback, a SWOT analysis. You know, what's going well, what are they not happy with, what do they want to change, all those sorts of things. And then basically the final, it was like SWOT plus one, was like how can I help? And getting that in feedback from the staff that had already been through the last six, eight weeks, and a member of staff that had been there a year, really helped provide information to sort of go, okay, this is going okay, but how can we make that? This is a problem, or we're finding it frustrating. How can we actually put a better process or a better protocol in place that helps free staff up a little bit more time to do rehab or have meetings or whatever it was? I think that was, upon reflection, a really good sort of thought that I had within the first sort of 3 or 4 days. It wasn't my initial plan sort of thing. It's just literally to try and go around and speak to people, but getting stuck in, it was like, right, I need to get people's thoughts that have been on the ground for the last weeks, months, etc. Yeah, and that ultimately has helped shape sort of what we do and how we do our work here and why and when and all the sorts of things, really.
I think it's
There's loads to take away from that, though, isn't there? Because you've gone in with an initial plan, but like Ben said, you've almost got a comfort zone of actually delivering as a coach is a really important skill. It's probably going to settle you down. But I think As any new role, when you've got first impressions that do count, just getting stuck in and being yourself probably is the best thing, you know, and it certainly sounds like it was there. I think the big thing that struck me there, what you're saying, is what pretty much a bit of a unique situation you've got there, because most departments, I'm trying to think in this country, if you think of stepping into a lead role in most departments, you probably have had a number of staff who have been there for a long time, you know, whereas, you know, you've gone into an environment where you've got people who are 6 to 8 weeks and maybe one person is a year on the ground, like you say. So that must have been really refreshing, because it's almost like there wasn't we've always done it this way mentality. Was everyone like, we're open to new ideas, let's, what have you got for us, let's crack on?
Yeah, I'd say they've, like, the staff there have been really open to sort of like everything that we've done and the meetings that we've set and discussed. And it's been quite a, like, just reflecting on it now, because sort of the documentation that we've ended up creating has been a really long, like, sort of process in terms of writing the documents. It took probably 3 months, but it would have been easy, I think, to just sort of go, oh, this is what we did at Stoke, and we'll sort of try and play where I am. Like, it just won't work. And any practitioner that's moving, yes, they'll have ideas and things like that. But I also think, if you're like, I'm in charge of a group of staff, yes, they want guidance from me, but they don't really want me to, I don't think they want me to come in and say, this is what you need to deliver, how you need to deliver it. It's like, okay, what do we want as a general group of staff to deliver? Okay, and then how is the best way in which we can deliver that, and then try and empower the staff to do that. So if we're having meetings on, okay, we want to deliver some gym sessions, okay, where do we start the gym sessions? Do we start them at an injury prevention level? Do we start them at a more of a performance level? What have they done before? Those discussions help to shape how those gym programs work. The same with, I feel like, our medical protocols, our return to play, all those sorts of things are like, okay, what do we think is the best way in our context for players to progress through an S&C, an injury rehab, a treatment, whatever it is. So I've tried to really include staff in sort of, we have a meeting, we discuss it, we throw ideas on the whiteboards that we've got, and then I'll try and pull it together, send it around, get people feedback on that. We're happy and we move on to the next one. So that's literally what has been happening for the last sort of 3 months, in terms of sort of trying to document, I think, what I think people that work in academies in the UK take for granted, like their sort of performance plans, which document what is their sports science philosophy, what is their rehab philosophy, all those sorts of things that have been embedded at, for example, at Stoke for 10 years while the EPP has been going on, whereas there's been drafts and things like that and protocols in place, but we've got a relatively new group of staff, and those staff should have a voice in shaping that moving forward. And that's what's been actually probably one of the most enjoyable parts of it, is like the staff have been really open, and there's a good togetherness in terms of working, and there's that sort of busyness. People want to improve and get better and make the department better, make our support better. So on reflection, that's probably been one of the top like highlights from a practitioner perspective.
Yeah, that's interesting in terms of where you mentioned there about not being able to take the program that you had previously and drop it into a different role, because it's something we've talked about quite a bit, isn't it? Every job, every opportunity you get, it's contextual, isn't it, in terms of what's going on. There's a lot of moving parts. There's obviously lessons that you're going to have taken and things that you're going to learn to take forward, but it's different, isn't it? So you spoke there about initial challenges, and these are things obviously that'll excite you as a coach, because these are the things that you can make an impact with. But what are some of the standouts in terms of those challenges? Because I imagine being at Stoke for that amount of time, yes, there's going to be things that crop up from time to time that maybe catch you a little bit off guard, but you probably know, you knew that program like the back of your hand, didn't you? I know what you said before about being a small part of the program, but I think a lot of people probably disagree and say that you're a much bigger part than that. So you knew that program well. Going into this new environment, there's going to be different types of challenges, isn't there? So what were some of the key things that you're facing?
I think I'd say, obviously, because of the heat, it's generally a night-based program. And access to players is probably not as big as what it is in the UK. So you might have under-18s and 21s, although those age groups are in 8:30 to 3:30 or something like that. Ours is generally structured around sort of 4:30, 5 o'clock till sort of 8-ish. So it's a more condensed sort of time. So it's really been picking or trying to prioritise what is really, really important. So you're not going to get in. It was very difficult to get in because of transport, like activation and pre-warm-ups and then a warm-up and then a physical stimulus in there on the pitch, like isolated, and then gym sessions afterwards, and then we're going to live with some nutritional sessions and psychology sessions. Like, that's the time is more limited, I'd say. So really picking it, key moments to sort of go, okay, this session here, this football session here is a conditions-based session. So if you like, the support around that session should be basically in terms of developing lower body strength, in terms of some movement control, movement capabilities and things like that. Because we really started, we felt we should start with, if you like, not going back to basics, but fundamental movements. Can the players move well, first of all? And then once they can move well, can they move force? After that, can they move fast? And then can they move often? That's, if you like, one of our S&C concepts that we've come up with. So we'll focus around that on certain days, and then other days when we potentially don't want to have S&C in there because of time and things like that, we might be able to get in additional support in terms of a nutritional workshop or a well-being workshop and other little bits and pieces that we've tried in, just in terms of like educating players, because they've really been a sponge to what we've tried to do. There have been loads and loads of questions of like, coach, why do I do this? Coach, why do I do that? And it's not from a arrogant perspective at all. It's really from like, I'm interested to know how this is going to help me become ultimately a better footballer. So we put a lot of education in terms of explaining, if you like, why we do it, when we do it, what are the best ways in which they can look after themselves outside of, if you like, the academy. That's really been some of the differences, the time challenges, if you like, and then it's a small group of staff. So a lot of the age groups train at the same time. So you could have 7-8 age groups training at night. So it's physically impossible to get around every single age group and deliver something. So it's trying to pick the sessions where you think you can add the most value in, basically maximising your time as a group of staff, if that makes sense.
I was going to ask that in terms of the staffing structure. So what does that look like? Like, how many on the sports science side, or even just medical as a whole, like, what sort of staff have you got?
We've got full-time doc and 2 full-time phys. Myself, 2 full-time sports scientists. I've got some part-time physios. So if you like, compare that to Cat 1 that we had at Stoke, it's a smaller group of staff. So in just like practically, you're not able to facilitate everything that you want to do. So the actual process of working through all those meetings when we're looking back and like, oh, we're coming early or we're staying a bit late to have a meeting and people are tired, they really help structure and help us like focus and prioritize. Like, ultimately, our context doesn't allow me to take, let's go and take the Stoke model and put it in Abu Dhabi. It physically doesn't work. But our players are different. They're, do you know what I mean? The facilities are different. The number of staff that we've got are different. So the process of the meetings, the brainstorming and coming up with our model has been like long. It took 4 months to actually document it, but it's been really enjoyable.
I'm really interested in this, because how have you found, you know, Cat 1 Stoke, like you said, I mean, I was there quite a lot during the basics process, and you see the staff, the facility is unbelievable. You're in charge of all them staff. You then go there. Just so people are aware, is there an ECCC sort of equivalent over there in Abu Dhabi, or are you kind of week in
Yeah,
Rome?
there's academy requirements. Yeah.
So then that's brilliant. So how have you found, having nutritionists you can call on, multiple sports scientists, work placement students, PhD students? Have you found it quite freeing knowing that, you've got a small group of staff, but you're all in it together and you're just working? Or have you got actually sometimes I would rather have, much more staff? Which one right now?
Well, at this moment in time, I think the group of staff that we've got is like suffice to what we're delivering. And if you, in my, I'm just from a personal perspective, coming in having more staff and more responsibilities, and then probably having then more chaos would have could have been, I guess, more unmanageable. But in terms of obviously just turning up, and this is a group of staff I've got, it's literally just been prioritizing what we're able to deliver, educate, because I think just in general in football, we don't want players to rely solely on staff as much as we may think we're important and stuff like that. That if you get player ownership, it certainly helps because they're more able to look after themselves or do the things that we want to do. And we're not always having to run around and ask players to do stuff. So I think putting a big emphasis on helping players understand what is good practice and how it will help them has been really, really useful. If we had more staff, we might have probably offered more, but because we've concentrated, I think, in terms of just sports science and some monitoring, some testing, getting a periodization model sort of in place, like match day codes and things like that, that's allowed us to.
If you're not already a member of our online community, now is a great time to join. We've just uploaded a number of different webinars and presentations, including a presentation by the head of performance at St. Pat's Athletic over in Ireland by Paul McGrath. Paul covered a number of different topics, but he spoke about how style of play informs his preparation, the demands in the League of Ireland, and creating a physical pathway, along with a number of other topics as well. So you can go and check that webinar out. We posted a preview over on the socials as well, so you can go and have a look at that, and many others by going to footballfitfed.com. Click the community tab, sign yourself up there. It'll give you a free 30-day trial. After that, you become a full paid member of the community and you get invited into our WhatsApp group as well, where we have discussions on a number of different topics from with members all over the world. So you grow your network straight away of coaches and get a number of coaches you can reach out to and ask questions to as well. So come and join us, the Football Fitness Online Community. Go to footballfitfed.com, click the community tab, sign yourself up there to a free 30-day trial. Here's part two of the podcast with Paul White.
Get the gym sessions in, and then working with medical to get medical protocols formalised as to how we would like them, and a return to play board and protocols. So if we get an injury, we know there's certain criteria that we want them to hit before they move on to the next person. It's allowed us probably to go a little bit deeper, if that makes sense. And obviously, not so much working with medical stock rather than being sort of in charge or line managing. It's allowed me to sort of delve a little bit deeper into sort of those areas, into an area that I didn't oversee, if that makes sense.
I think that sounds like it's been really powerful. And Ben said it before, where sometimes when you've got to go deeper, like you say, and you've got to rely on educating players, so they're almost not self-managing, but you know what I mean? They really have a big input in their own process. It's almost like, and I know Ben loves the term, like removing the fluff a little bit from a day-to-day of a Cat One or maybe a Cat Two environment where players might not do X, Y, Z because they know the sports scientist or the nutritionist or whoever's gonna pick it up. So that sounds like it's been really effective. How have you found the players, receiving your input? Are they really kind of flying with what you're trying to impact them with and get them doing? Are they really kind of taking it all on board?
Yeah, in terms of just delivering the education, like a reflection on that is that's been quite challenging because when I think I put something on LinkedIn about just some of the slides, some of the things we delivered. Now, people might have looked on that as just like really basic messages, But what I tried to do was deliver that basic message in English and Arabic. Now, not in terms of speaking Arabic, I'm whatever, 10, 12 words and basic conversation at the minute, but to provide a meeting or PowerPoint slides that I've got English and Arabic, I think it's really important because ultimately I'm an Arab speaking nation. So I think it's really important that whatever slides and information has been delivered should be translated into, if like, the home nation's like language. And then the few words that I can say, I will try, I'll get them wrong and they'll laugh. But then use the system manager or team manager to sort of help and translate. I think it's helped. It's hopefully it shows that I'm trying to embed myself and that it's, I'm just refusing it. I'm just speaking English. I'm trying to embed myself into sort of the language and the sort of the key words of like greetings and football words and bits and pieces like that. That has been a real challenge to try and go, oh, I want to say this, I want to get that. But actually, we're trying to get a meeting that's 15, 20 minutes maximum with some key messages on 8 slides. And we need English words, Arabic words, and obviously it needs to look appealing to the eye. So pictures and things like that. That was enjoyable, but really challenging to sort of try and focus and actually, right, what do I need to say? What do they need to understand? And like, what can they remember when they walk out of the room? That's been really enjoyable, I must say.
That's the crucial point, probably the last one that you made there, isn't it? Like, what are they actually going to go away with? Because we've probably all delivered some sort of education at some points, and or even been involved in people delivering education to yourself. And then when you leave, it's sort of in one ear and out the other. And it's I know you're saying there about it being relatively basic information, looking at it from sort of an English model, an English perspective. But even over here, those basics, you've got to drum them home, haven't you? Because when you speak to people, that's what people revert back to. It's the basics for a reason, because we need them to be done properly. So I understand that completely. That's got to be drummed home to players, hasn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Like, there's no point if you take nutrition example. There's no point having a 35 grand nutritional supplement budget if the food in the canteen's no good. You know, the basics of eating breakfast, if you like, in the UK before you train, or here because we train at night, making sure they eat before training and they have something at night, and them understanding what to eat and like maybe some timings and pre-match meals and post-match meals, understanding that. A little bit better and sort of making some changes to sort of what we provide. That's the foundation before I would even sort of go and ask for, oh, can I get some supplements? Because I want, for me, that's what keeps players like fueled and recovered from training and games. Yeah, so that's the approach we've took. And I guess with a small group of staff, we've not had a nutritionist to sort of go and ask those questions and want to do that. It's sort of been, right, this is what we need to prioritise. So let's focus on that and then we'll see what happens next season.
I know it's something
Oh,
John
it's something, John.
on before around the staffing, which is interesting because obviously in England and sort of Premier League, you see some academies and first teams that have got a large number of staff, haven't they? And like you mentioned before, that's great, but obviously it's going to be a lot more chaos going on because there's a lot more voices, there's a lot more input, there's a lot more personalities, potentially issues. So it's interesting to hear how things are developing with yourself and how you're sort of pulling people together. Just tying that in though, what would you see as the next initial priorities? Like, what are the next steps for you to be focusing on within the program, within the everything you're delivering as a whole?
Well, we're trying to improve the facilities and equipment that we've got. Certainly, if you like, from a cost, if that makes sense, in terms of some purchasing some equipment, so we hopefully can deliver some a better service from the gym. In terms of from a practical point, to embed some of the ideas from a training periodization model into the sort of coaching model, and I've delivered some CPD on that in terms of some concepts and just simple words. Again, it's a multi national workforce, so it obviously needs to be quite simple. Some key things that we look for on key days, and again, they're not groundbreaking in terms of, I'm pretty sure everyone in the academies in the UK will be doing them, but obviously go, well, let's start to introduce exposure to max velocity. And we've done that simply by just having an exposure on a match day minus two or match day minus three, just literally one sprint. I think I did something similar at Stoke, and I think I ended up reading one of Martin Bouchier's papers that sort of said match day minus two was sort of the best. So it fitted in anyway with what we were doing, and we've sort of implemented that, and we're seeing players improve their maximum velocity. Not massively, but like there's small increments throughout the season from what we've seen. So it'll be more to sort of work with the coaches, because I don't think the sports scientists can be the best in the world, but if they're sat in their office on their own and they're not in with coaching staff having conversations about training, it's absolutely pointless. So for me, that's really key. Our sports scientists are in with coaches in little mini hubs themselves. And what again, very, very simple, but it's we've ended up with obviously calendars on the board, big whiteboards, and there's when I first came, they might have had coaching information on and coaches planning when the game isn't training. But now we've got gym sessions on there, we've got like an educational lecture on there. We've got the key things that sort of tie the program together. So we want to do an upper body session on there, we want to do an education session there, and max velocity is, for example, currently on minus two, minus three, depending on the sort of schedule. So it'd be to bring us and the coaches closer together would be to have a more integrated and put more detail into that, basically.
Jordan, you've had experience on that in terms of that integration, working with coaches. Like, is there anything around that that you'd touch on?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked that, or you answered that, because that was going to be my next question, was the coaching side of things. Because typically, obviously, in English academies, majority are English coaches, which would probably usually stick to English modalities. You said you're multinational. Was there any like, Spanish or Italian influences or Arabic influences where the coaching style was very, very different, which threw up, some real challenges where you're like, whoa, no, that's very different to what I'm used to? Or was it something you could kind of slot some of those models, like you said, match day minus two, max velocity, whatever it was, relatively easily in?
No, I think even before, like, I started to go in and just literally, if you like, start to recommend things, and I think we should do this and this, was actually understand the coaching curriculum. So there is a coaching curriculum with themes, to understand that, to understand the schedule here, and it's a bit different. So our games, for example, go Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Generally, then Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So no one week sort of looks the same. So scheduling is like a new challenge. I know if you work 23s or in the UK, the sort of 21 schedule is a bit messy compared to, say, the 18s and things like that. But it's a new scheduling for the fixtures because the league over here. So understand when the games are, how they're currently working, understand the coaching curriculum that they're academy director wants the coaches to deliver. And then really just try not to intervene too much and just sort of like have conversations and go for smaller wins. So, for example, if you notice that everything starts to be in bigger areas, if we're, why not have, let's overload five a side today, or we'll go smaller area, or yeah, it's literally just been as simple as that in understanding, and that helped us with the match day themes in sort of understanding, and then that allowed us to put the support services. I know I keep coming back to the support services, but what I was conscious of is not going in going, here's the football periodization model that I want, here's this. Actually, let's get our department in order and hopefully working to a highly effective level, and then we can start more of the integration with other departments. Because I think if you have someone new that comes over and then starts interfering in maybe a coach that's been there a year or two, you can people up the wrong way. So it's more or less, let's make sure our house is in order, and then start to influence and have conversations. And it will literally just be to take those conversations sort of to the next level.
I think that's really powerful, isn't it? I think anyone listening, certainly if you're newer to a managerial position or lead department, literally sitting down with coaches, or even, you know, saying to the head of coaching or whoever might be in charge of that curriculum, saying, can you send me your coaching curriculum and we'll have a look over it, we'll understand it, you know, and exactly like you said there, rather than going, oh, by the way, we need to do this on this day, this on this day, this on this day. Oh, by the way, what are you doing? You know, it's almost the other way around, isn't it? And go, well, what are you doing? I love all that. That looks amazing. Could we potentially just try and slot this in there? And I suppose it must be quite in unique for you after 13 years at Stoke that, you know, that was mesh. That was completely joined up thinking. Whereas now you're having to go back into a situation where it was like, actually, we've got to start. But I love the term, get your own house in order. I thought the thing that works really well. My question on that was, how did the sports scientists, your S&C guys, and your doc and your physio, how did they take that on board in terms of meshing into what the coaches were saying? And was it like actually taking a step back, or was it, we're already at a good level, we can crack on with this?
No, if you like, from the sports science and medical side, the conversations and meetings we've had, they've been fully involved. So they've, for me, had opportunity to give their opinion on, I think we should do this, I think we should do that. For example, the return to play protocol that we put in place, like, I'm not like a qualified medic. So when I'm saying stage one, I've got the phases from the, like, the theory books and all the articles, etc. But I'm like, what are your key criterias for exiting that stage one, then stage two? That's up to the physio and the medical departments to drive that. My viewpoint has been, when I delivered sort of how I wanted the rehab philosophy to be, didn't tell sort of the physios what to do. It was just like, the philosophy for me should be on a can-do attitude, not can't-do. So when we're having the meeting, I know there's a groin strain or a calf strain or a hamstring, whatever it is. I know that because we've got the information through the AMS system. But what we need to be discussing is, what is that person doing today? So that person's in for 3 hours. So for me, it's a can-do attitude. So that is, if you like, what I implemented or suggested, should I say. But actually what he can do is up to whatever the physio wants. We basically just need players working hard for a variety of reasons. We work around the injury. So that's had no issues whatsoever, because I'm not sort of saying to the physio that, oh, you can't do that treatment or this treatment. What I'm saying is, it needs to be joined up. So what is your opinion of, he's fit, he's ready to go because he's been with you for 2 weeks, and then he comes to me. But I should know what that he's fit, he's ready to go looks like, because otherwise you say he's ready to go, I go and do something based off that opinion, and something could go wrong, and then I turn around to you and you say, well, it was ready to go with me, and you've got then issues around communication. So it's just been around, what is our exit criteria? What can we monitor relatively effectively? Some from various types of runs and stuff like that. Again, similar to ones we use at Stoke. But that's just allowed clarity. So we know when someone says they've done X, everyone's got that picture in their head of what that looks like.
Nice. I bet the coaches love that as well, haven't they? The can-do attitude. My experience, coaches usually like it that way.
Yeah, I think all coaches want players to sort of work hard in general. And I don't think the physio rooms they're not perceived, I don't think, as like how it was a long, long time ago. It's like, listen, you're injured, but there's always something you can do. Like, generally, a lot of the injuries are lower limb. So like the population over here is generally slighter than sort of UK, so there's fantastic opportunity to put a bit of muscle mass on and work areas that they potentially not done, or do some education around why that happens, or work the other limb. So I think that's a given, if you like. If coaches will ask how is he doing, and go what's he up to. So I think being able to say, whether ankle sprain, but we've been doing this and this, I think that shows the togetherness between the support staff and the coaches, because you've got that communication, and the player might not fully enjoy the hard work at the time, over a period of time. They certainly do when they look back and go, oh yeah, I couldn't do that. I found that really hard. If it's a long-term rehab, you can show them, like, yeah, this is how far you've come. And as much as hard work's not always nice, but when you finish the hard work, you then get the endorphins kicking in, and it does feel nice.
I think we'll have a fair few coaches that might be looking for sort of next opportunities, Chalky, in terms of just moving. They might have been in roles for a fair amount of time. They might not. Might be looking to move abroad. It just might be a different club. What would be some standout advice you'd give coaches on, first of all, pursuing a move and trying to tie down a move, but then also, like, in terms of once they've got the opportunity, what would be like your top advice that you'd leave listeners with if they were to go into a new role?
Well, I guess the roles, if they're advertised, obviously the general websites that I guess most people are aware of, like FMPA, Jobs for Football, yeah, would be the two that sort of spring out to mind. Also UK sport bases, places like that. Obviously LinkedIn would be the one, in terms of sort of reaching out to people and just sort of saying, listen, if there's anything out there, just I'd be sort of interested in terms of that. So that it would just generally be within the networking sort of methods, I'd say, just to sort of see what opportunities there are, where they are, whether that's abroad or within the UK. And the second part was when you sort of move into that new club, weren't it?
Yeah.
So I think depending on the role, if you're moving into sort of a lead role, and I guess these are going to be experienced people, then I'd just be embracing what you're walking into, and get stuck in, reflect, and try and take people on a journey with you. If you're going and saying, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're doing this, we're doing that, I think you'll rub people up the wrong way. I've always been someone that's tried to take people with me, like through the course that I did, in terms of looking at leadership styles. I ended up, like, my leadership style was, I described as servant leadership style. So although I might be seen as head of department, my role, I think, is to support the other staff, deliver what they need to deliver, their maybe their specialism. So support the physio to deliver the rehab, or support the sports scientist to do this, or the S&C or nutritionist psychologist, as it was at Stoke. So that's how I would look at it, in terms of sort of coming in and going, we're doing this, with sort of a thumping fist and stuff like that. I think that, for me, that won't work. Try and be objective, ask loads of questions. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. And if you are trying to do things, then I would always go and do work on something that's the what we'll call the minimal viable product. And it's something we did at Stoke, in terms of, like, when we built Power BI, and the things that we're trying to do here is sort of build the bare minimum to test it out, and then you review that test, and then you go and do it. So rather than go and build out, let's stay with that idea, a Power BI for four age groups, build it for one age group for two tests. Does it work? Do the date ranges move? Can you move the graphs in different orders? Can you have different graphs? All that sort of stuff, whatever the functionalities you want. And then once you've done that, then you roll it out across the age groups. And I've always taken that sort of model, in terms of, with everything that we've tried to do here, is what's the bare minimum we can do to test something, and then get feedback. So whether that's feedback from coaches, players, or something like a protocol that we're developing in-house, or things like that, it's always go and test it, feedback, right, okay, we change, or that's good to go, and let's try and roll it out across as many age groups as we can, if you like, support. That's always been really useful, to be fair, because otherwise you can spend a lot of time and then go, it's not working. And you go back to the drawing board and you spent a load of time and got nowhere.
I think it's real valuable advice that, and something that I think coaches will definitely take on board. Jordan, I'll open up to you in a second just to see if there's anything, any other burning questions that you've got. But Chalky, just in terms of if people want to reach out, might have a few asking around moves, similar moves, or just your previous experience at Stoke, for example, where would you direct people to go?
Probably LinkedIn is the best. It's just be Paul White. If you come up or put Paul White out of Zero Club, I'll be on there in a nice bright light blue t-shirt, I think it is, in the sunshine. But yeah, that's probably the best one, and then we can connect that way and field any questions or anything that they want to do. That's probably the best way, I say.
Brilliant. Jordan, have you got anything else?
No, this is, I think it's really a powerful message, if you like, because it's brave. Like, I mean, I thought asking my missus from moving down from the Midlands to Bournemouth was a big ask, you know. So going that far abroad, I think it's really powerful. And I know there's a lot of people who do want to work abroad. So final message, I suppose, to those guys, from the sounds of it, you know, go for it. Is that definitely something you would endorse?
Yeah, obviously everyone's situation is different, and I'll just have to weigh up in terms of what the pros and cons are. From a selfish point of view, it was a great opportunity, and I'm lucky that Mrs. has fully supported me, and the little one is sort of really, really enjoying like a different way of life out here. But yeah, it wouldn't have, I wouldn't have been. I don't know. How can I describe it? Yeah, if the circumstances, if you think you can do it, and should it work out, fantastic, brilliant. If it doesn't work out, there's other opportunities, so you feel like you can do something. That's probably the best way in terms of like it failing. That's probably going to hurt a little bit, but if you feel like you can get back up on your feet and probably do something else, they say you're out of work in football, but then yeah, but by all means. It's certainly been really enjoyable, hard work at times, and like in and around work, I've seen some cool stuff. Like some of the stadiums out here are really cool, like stadiums up in the mountains, like some beautiful like scenery. Obviously over here, like the Grand Mosque is absolutely outstanding. Like I wouldn't have experienced those. Obviously, still been in the UK, so I'm very fortunate to sort of be where I am and see some of the things and experience some of the things that I've done.
Pass. No, really appreciate
Chalky, it's been great to catch up, mate. Thank you very much for coming on. I know it's getting late over there, so we'll let you go and get your head down for a little bit before you tackle another busy day tomorrow. But I really appreciate coming back on. It's been far too long, mate.
No, appreciate you. Appreciate your time, Ben and Jordan. Nice to catch up. Yeah, it has been a fair few months since we said we originally do this. So no, I appreciate you taking the time out of a bank holiday, yeah?
Top man. Thanks, mate.
Brilliant. Take care.
You too.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Really enjoyed recording that episode with Paul and Jordan. A big thank you to the lads for coming on. It's always great to catch up with Paul. I spoke to Jordan after the podcast. We said it. So it's always great to speak to people like Paul because he speaks so openly about the things that he's doing. Super, super experienced practitioner that I know has done some great work. I know he sort of played down what he'd done at Stoke, but he did some incredible work over the years there. Obviously, 13 seasons at a club, a number of players through in that academy, and some great processes and systems in place as well. And loads of coaches worked with as well. So, yeah, brilliant work by Chalky at Stoke. And it's great to see the work he's doing or hear about the work he's doing over in the UAE now. And takeaways on this one, he spoke about the phrase busy, didn't he, towards the start, and him describing being busy as being passionate. And I think I agree with that. I think that being busy shows that you care, it shows that you're trying to go the extra mile, you're trying to help people. Yes, players might see that as busy, but there's going to be a lot that take a hell of a lot from that as well and realize that you're passionate about what you do. He said, performing a SWOT analysis in that new role. So the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats within that role, but also the SWOT plus one, which was the layer he added on top of it in terms of like the next steps that they were going to put into place. He also underlined the importance of basics, which comes up a hell of a lot in the podcast, really nailing those basics. Integrating sports science with the coaches as well. I know it's something that Chalky's done before in his role, and it's something that he's definitely, it sounds like he's trying to do over there and doing well as well. And that ties in with understanding the coaching curriculum, starting at that point, understanding what the coaches are trying to deliver and then seeing where sports science, strength conditioning, medicine can support that as well. And then I absolutely love the can-do attitude, not can't-do. I think that's something that everyone can take forward, not into just their work, but just into everything they do. Bringing a can-do attitude, especially he spoke a bit about in rehab. Okay, players can't do X, Y, Z, whatever it is around the injury, but let's have a look what they can do. There's going to be a hell of a lot of things that they can do. And I think that relates also to different opportunities and different scenarios. There might be, in your role, it might be that you can't do certain things because you're restricted on time. You might be restricted on budget, restricted on facilities, whatever it is. But what can you do? There's going to be a hell of a lot that you can do. So taking that attitude forward, I think will definitely help, and a great bit of advice from Paul as well. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed this. It was great to catch up with Paul and to have Jordan on the podcast as well. I've had people messaging, asking when Jordan's going to be back on. We are going to be recording a few more episodes with Jordan and I as well. So look out for those. They will be coming very soon. Big thank you for listening to the episode, and make sure to go and give us a review. It really does help us out. Just last thing from me, go and check out the sponsors. They're doing some brilliant work. The Good Prep, Rezl and Hydro. Go and give them a follow over on socials. Show them some love, because they definitely help the podcast out. Being coming to you every single week. So go and give them a follow and go and check them out. Thank you again for listening. I'll speak to you again in episode 291.